So the maestro behind our theme song here, Waiting for the World to Change, has a birthday today. Is that what you're telling me, Kim?
Yes, sir. 47. John Mayer is 47 today. Still waiting for the world to change, too, I'm pretty sure.
He's a young'un. Only 47, yeah.
Yeah, 47.
And we're all still waiting for the world to change. That's for darn sure. 26.
I got to tell you, he is an amazing guitar player. He is like one of he's like virtuoso level guitar player. Just in case you didn't know.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he is amazing.
What caliber would you put him on?
Oh, he's up the he's next level. He's Eddie Van Halen level. He's
wow.
Yeah, he's amazing guitar player.
Well, we enjoy his talents to start us with each and every program we call What's on Your Mind. 26 before the top of the hour. I'm Scott Hennon in Watford City today, coming to you from our window on Main. Looking over Watford City there today from the McKenzie County Farmer offices. And, of course, KTGO country. So glad to be out here today. The flag, AM 1090 in the west, AM 1100 in the east. We got you covered here on the program today. And let's see what we have lined up for you today. We have some tickets to tomorrow night's big event in just a little bit. Michelle Tafoya and Liz Collin are going to be here. Tomorrow night's the big night. We've been talking about that for a while. The media, the truth, and you. These are two journalists that really buck the trend. The trend in journalism, here's how I say it. Journalism, as we know it, is dead. All right? When you look at long-standing traditions of the media and the alphabet soup of networks and newspapers and everything. Basically, the vast majority of them are corporate leftists that just go along with whatever the left wants. They're an arm of, in this case, what Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are peddling. So that, to me, is not journalism. That's activism, and it's dead. Now there's pockets out there you can find it, but. And Liz Collin and Michelle Tafoya are two good examples of it. So it's going to be fun to talk to, and hear from a couple of folks that have such decorated careers a little bit about just what's happened to the whole industry. And, of course, Liz is behind the fall of Minneapolis. She has a new documentary that I believe drops today.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yep. Had her on this morning. Yep, tomorrow.
How about that? So, and Liz is going to be on the show today as well to talk a little bit about this some more. It is We the People, Minnesota versus We the People, and about the amount of first responders that have died on the job.
Murdered.
Right. And we yawn. We don't, it gets hardly any coverage. So did a great job talking to the families again. And, of course, the fall of Minneapolis is all about everything you were told, again, through the prism of journalism about George Floyd. Pretty much everything is incorrect and is some made-for-TV fairy tale rather than, the record the person had, the fact that he resisted arrest, the fact that he was being arrested, the fact that he had fentanyl in his system, all these things. And then the trial they were hiding things that they shouldn't have been hiding, and the body cam footage wasn't out there. None of it we would know, but for the fall of Minneapolis and the work of Liz Collin. So anyway, I think you'll want to take this in. It'll be fun tomorrow night. Tickets start at $15. If you haven't got yours yet, go to am1100theflag.com. You'll be able to get them at the door. There's a VIP meet and greet as well with Michelle and Liz. And we have discounts for teachers, veterans, law enforcement. Tell you about that and give away some tickets coming up. And Liz will join us on the show as well today. So we're looking forward to that. We're going to chat with Dale Patton. Dale is a senator representing the Watford City area. There is great concern about the what-ifs if Measure 4, the property tax reform measure, passes as it pertains to rural North Dakota, smaller communities. And we're going to talk with Dale a little bit about that. You've got, in the case of McKenzie County, Watford City, 70% of the revenue generated that pays for the roads and the bridges and the schools and all of these things are generated from companies that are pulling oil out of the ground. And part of the great American energy renaissance that has been happening here for a couple of decades in the Bakken. I mean, going back obviously to the 50s, but the latest renaissance with the Bakken shale play as we know it, more back to the 2010 era. So we've been at this a while, and we're going to talk with Dale a little bit about from his perspective. Again, he is a member of the legislature. If this were to pass, he's the one, along with his colleagues, has to say, okay, where are we going to find $3.15 billion in a general fund budget of about $6 billion? It's an important number to remember, because when you hear about, they can find $3 billion out of a $20 billion budget, the $20 billion budget is, not all what you would call general fund dollars or funds that you can actually say, okay, we don't want to do that. Some of it's federal money that passes through and a bunch of other things. So we'll walk through all of those challenges for rural North Dakota with Dale Patton today, talking Measure 4 on the program. Also, I think you're going to enjoy our conversation with Dr. Keith Albo. He'll be here a little later on in the program. He's a you've seen him on Fox News as a medical contributor there. And he is talking a little bit about how Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and Elon Musk have come behind Donald Trump and said that in a Trump administration, they will help reshape the government. And that would mean streamlining the bureaucracy, reducing the influence of big tech and big pharma, putting people first, not the government, right? A little different than Harris Walz, who surround themselves with D.C. insiders and mega-rich donors. And, you know, the party of wealth is the Democrats. They're the ones with all the big billionaire donors writing big checks and of course, a revolving door of lobbyists turned to government officials. And I think the divide is really clear in the healthcare industry. And so what RFK Jr. and Musk talk a lot about is personal freedom and transparency versus, power and influence to keep the status quo and all of those things. So, Dr. Ablo is going to talk a little bit today about how the FDA and other government agencies have been working really to keep some treatments from the public for reasons that are not about your health. And on other occasions, propping up lesser medical options for political reasons. This, to me, has been a fascinating dynamic in this campaign, and largely it came from the alliance with RFK Jr., which I think, again, is going to be one of the things we look back on election night and say that made a difference. Elon Musk made a difference, where you have the Democratic Party sort of going down the way of crazy policies like let's take prisoners and have taxpayers pay for their sex change surgeries, right? Or excusing men playing in women's sports. These aren't confused. I honestly think I want to talk a little bit about this today on the program in a wider sense, because Donald Trump gave a great interview yesterday, sat down for like an hour plus with this hostile Bloomberg journalist who, obviously hates Donald Trump and hates most of his policies, but had a very, do you see any of it, Kev? I mean, they sat down and they're back and forth, and he's coherently, saying, here's my policies, and being challenged on them and having what the American people deserve in the way of a presidential campaign, an actual transparent way of saying, okay, here you are on a stage, mm-hmm. You're hearing from a journalist who doesn't agree with you, answering questions about your policies on the economy. Novel concept. And it's Bloomberg, okay? It's a leftist financial reporting institution. And Kamala Harris says no to friendly territory. She's not going to sit down and mainly because she can't. Right? For an hour plus, sit down and talk about her economic policy. What is it? I don't even know if she knows what it is, other than she grew up in a middle-class family. That I know. No. That part I have down.
She's unburdened by the passage of time.
Right, yes.
And on and on. You know,
so
the reason she doesn't do that is because you're right, because she can't. She needs to be prepared. She knows that she needs to know that the moderator is prepared. She can't, she's got a free form. She's got to go off script. She can't. She even, in that Telemundo town halls, you see that footage? She had a teleprompter working.
I know.
And the camera went behind her, and then they killed the prompter. Like, this is absolute theater, the whole thing. And she doesn't do well with improv, bro.
No, which is very, very obvious. And again, this is dangerous stuff. You're talking about who the next president of the United States
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
When you're not vetting that candidate. Now, the poll numbers are flagging enough. I have an NPR piece I want to share today. When NPR is talking about her numbers tanking and his surging, folks, something's in the air. And they actually did an analysis of the swing states. This, again, NPR, again, forever a leftist arm. So we're gonna break that down a little bit. But when we look back on election day after what I believe will be a Trump victory, I think you're gonna see things like Robert Kennedy Jr. specifically on this question of, the FDA and the health of Americans. And so looking forward to a conversation on that with Dr. Keith Ablo today on the program. Seen him on Fox News, and you'll hear him today on What's on Your Mind. So a little bit of that, a little bit of this, And then I want to talk about what's your common sense. Trump said in that interview with Bloomberg yesterday, says, you know, people just want common sense back. And he went through his list of common sense. And I think, you know, yesterday we talked to some folks that support Kamala Harris for reasons they claim had nothing to do with the fact they didn't like Donald Trump, which was, I thought, a productive conversation. Today, I want to just kind of know, for those of you that have left the Democratic Party or the Harris Walls, you know, Obama team, why? You know, as the party left you, is common sense gone? What is common sense? So we'll dig into that a little bit today, too. I have some tickets to give away to tomorrow night's event, The Media, The Truth, and You, with Michelle Tafoya and Liz Collin. So stay tuned, because you'll have a chance to win them when we come back on What's on Your Mind. Not one, but two pair of tickets. Stay tuned. 10 before the top of the hour on What's on Your Mind, brought to you today by Chose Investments, KJOSinvestments.com. You're looking for land? We're going to sell land, develop some property? The pros of Chose Investments. We also have some great property to move into right now, commercial real estate, both on the industrial and commercial office side as well. So go to ChoseInvestments.com. Have a conversation with the good folks there. You won't regret it. KJOS Investments, ChoseInvestments.com. All right, Kev, so you can take the next two callers, tee them up to chat with us, and all we need is your email address, and we're going to send you tickets for tomorrow night's big event. It is The Media, The Truth, and You. You're going to love this. From two stars, Michelle Tafoya is one, and Liz Collin is the other. All you need to do is call me right now at 701-271-1100. 701-271-1100. Kevin's just going to select two random callers there.
Yep.
And we're going to slap a pair of tickets in your hands for this event tomorrow night. So call us at 701-271-1100, and you can join us free tomorrow night. You'll love the conversation. You really will. So Michelle Tafoya has starred on a lot of big stages in professional sports, now does a podcast on Salem Networks as well. Liz Collin, rising national star after a career in the Twin Cities television news industry, and has the Fall of Minneapolis documentary that has been seen by millions, tells the true story of Tim Walz's lack of leadership in Minneapolis and the disgusting saga behind George Floyd, who's been made out to be some kind of a hero now. And people, again, this is when the police force of Minneapolis went from, it was cut in half. I want to say there were 800-some officers, went to 400-some officers. Unbelievable. She has another documentary that's coming out this week talking about first responders that have been murdered in the line of duty. So she really has done a great job in that. And obviously, with the days now till the campaign wraps up, these two are connected. They're credible. Can shine some light on the election and the impact on this region and our country. The whole Tim Walz thing in Minnesota, nobody knows that better than these two. We have VIP tickets available, with a pre-show meet and greet tomorrow night, special discounts for teachers, veterans, law enforcement members. Prices start at $15. It'll fill your bucket. You need stuff like this now to election, trust me. Go to am1100theflag.com to buy tickets. That's am1100theflag.com website to buy tickets, starting at just $15. So really good deal. Also brought to you today by our friends at Thor Building. Let me just tell you a little bit about the folks at Thor and how they do things differently. Post-frame projects is what they do. Agriculture, commercial, and they are set apart from other builders in the area in a couple of ways. One, they guarantee their price. So once you get a price, it's your price. A lot of folks don't do that these days, and you get some surprises at the 11th hour. They don't do that at Thor. The other thing they do is they have their crews that are always their crews. They're not like outsourcing crews and then, oh, our guys didn't show up today or whatever. I mean, the crews are the Thor Building crews. They never change. It's the same team that helps them really focus on the quality. So pricing, planning, construction from start to finish, the team at Thor will guide you through all of that and put that next building project up and bring it to life. ThorBuildings.com to find out more. ThorBuildings.com. You're going to tell them Scott sent you. Call them at 800-8467. 800-8467 is the telephone number. As a matter of fact,
got our winners. John, right. Congrats to John Peterson. John will be there tomorrow night. And Melanie was caller number two. Melanie, you're going to tomorrow night. We'll see you there. Okay.
All right, thanks. Sounds great. Can't wait to hear Liz Collins. I've heard her several times with you guys, and I just can't wait to see her. So it'll be good.
She reminds you of what a journalist is supposed to be, doesn't she?
Right.
Yeah. I remember her back in the day on WCCO.
Yeah, and she actually left WCCO under a bunch of pressure because of her reporting over the George Floyd thing, because her husband was a member of the union leadership or something in law enforcement. It's just despicable. So she's and yet landed on her feet at that great Alpha News now. Yeah, she's great. So I think it'd be great to see you. Glad you liked Liz, and she's going to join us on the air a little later on to talk about her new documentary too.
And we'll shoot you an email with a little quote on it. That's all you'll need. We'll see you there.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you as well. Just watch your email inbox, because that's the easy way to get there. So nice and easy to sign up for these events. You'll love it for sure. So I was just reading a story from Politico. And again, Politico is, it's fake news. It's again, if you read Politico every day, you think Trump is the devil incarnate, and you think Kamala Harris walks on water. That having been said, Kev, the story is about how Pennsylvania is a dumpster fire for the Harris campaign. Here's a quote from a Democrat. Pennsylvania is such a mess. You got like top union officials saying that the Harris's team doesn't know what they're doing. Just listen to the first two paragraphs of the story. Again, from Politico. Top Democrats in Pennsylvania are worried Vice President Kamala Harris' operation is being poorly run in the nation's biggest battleground state. Now, we are less than 3 weeks away from the election. And if the state that is, by all accounts, the game changer, the must-win state, Philadelphia, and your operation is a dumpster fire, it's give it up. I mean, the time you have conversations like this are like 6 months ago, right? Not less than 3 weeks.
Right.
They say some Harris aides lack relationships with key party figures, particularly in Philadelphia and its suburbs, the story goes on to say. They complain they've been left out of events and surrogates haven't been deployed effectively. And they've urged Harris staff in private meetings to do more to turn out voters of color. I wonder if that's why we're seeing an 11th hour, my plan for black males.
Have you seen what's going on in Philadelphia? Have you seen how bad it is? Have you seen the Kensington neighborhood videos? Have you seen any of those, Scott, from Kensington?
No,
it's Zombieville.
I get it, but what I'm getting at is this is a Democratic run city.
I know
that has a Democratic machine unlike any other.
Yep.
And what this story is telling us
is still failing.
Is there they've got a dumpster fire going on basic things like get out the vote and who shows up at what event and hey, you got to do more to turn out voters of color. You don't do this within 3 weeks of a campaign.
No. Well,
this is people inside the campaign saying this is bad news. And you know, when you resort to sort of leaking to the media at this point, you're hoping for an 11th hour of somebody getting fired and they're complaining about
right. Yeah.
The first black head of the influential Building Trades Council, one of the most powerful labor leaders in the state, says he doesn't like her campaign manager.
Loaded that desperate.
Oh, my goodness. So anyway, just thought I'd give you a little bit of an update on that because that story just dropped. I just saw that and I'm like, wow, another day. Another story where they're leaking. We've had all these stories about Team Harris doesn't like Team Biden, and they're, you know, having fights in the campaign office and everything like that. This is what happened when you have a coup d'etat in the months before an election. You have a candidate that's never won a vote, never gone out there and got a vote in a single election. San Francisco liberal thinking, I could just do these platitudes. Look out, folks. Not good. Not good. Not good. Let's talk common sense when we come back on What's on Your Mind. And cause the mess in the meantime is my take and why I'm a no voter on Measure 4. But I also believe we need property tax relief matched with reform and actual caps on spending and a real plan. We deserve that. Kelly Armstrong talked about it yesterday, agrees as well, and says this is a must. So this is something we can, maybe we'll get to. It's a must. It's a top priority. So Looking forward to more of that conversation as well on the program today. Brought to you in part by our friends, by the way, at Schmitz, the candy store. That's right. Did you know that? The hardware store for women. That's what we're talking about here. Schmitz Gems and Fine Jewelry, locally owned, in-house custom goldsmith. Schmitz Gems and Fine Jewelry, 42nd Street, 32nd Avenue South in Fargo. Dean Wysocki is here to tell us about the weather scene as we sort of take the turn into more fall-like weather. Dipsy doodling back and forth a little, and it sounds like we have a little reprieve here yet from the cool stuff. So how are we looking, Dean?
We sure do. In fact, I wish there was more rain in the forecast. There's just not. Our drought continues to expand. We haven't had much precip at all over the last 6 weeks, and hopefully that changes here as we get towards the end of the month and into the start of November. We are starting to see a pattern change. First, it's going to take place out in the Rockies, where they're expecting a big snow event as we head into the end of the week. For today, though, we're looking at sunny skies across the state, mild conditions, breezy in the central and east, highs in the mid to upper 70s out west, not bad, low to mid 60s in the central and east. Thursday, I should say, we'll have windy and cooler weather out west, maybe an isolated light shower possible, but highs only in the 50s out west. And then it'll be windy and warm in the central and east with temperatures in the upper 60s to mid 70s. So big spread in temps across the state tomorrow. And then Friday, it will be cooler across the state, especially out west and in the central, with isolated showers. Best chance is going to be out to the west, and an isolated late-day shower possible in the central and east, with highs in the 50s in the western and central part of the state and 60s in the east. So far, at the start of our LRC cycle here, which started October 6th, so we're about 10 days into that, we're looking at generally above normal temperatures to start out each LRC cycle. We'll have to see how the kind of the back half of the LRC cycle goes here as we head into November. You cross our fingers it's not this dry, because that would lead to big, big problems as we head into the not only the winter months, but also the spring and summer. So, as I said, I do see a pattern change coming here. It's starting out in the Rockies this week, and I think by the end of the month, and especially into early November, we'll start to see the effects of that in the northern plains.
All right, there you go. Thanks, Dino.
You bet.
From the Flag Weather Center, as we do to start each and every program, right there, your very own chief meteorologist, Dean Wysocki, with the weather. So Donald Trump today will be on Fox News Channel with a town hall for women voters. Looking forward to that. That actually was taped, I believe, yesterday, but they're airing that today on Fox. He sat down for an hour with Bloomberg yesterday. Not exactly friendly fire. Had a back and forth conversation. It was very good. I want to play a clip of that in a moment and talk a little bit about it. Uncharacteristically, 19 days before the election, Kamala Harris has finally decided to do an interview where she has what can fairly be called, not friendly fire, right? It's Fox News. Now, I know some are concerned about Fox News and their treatment. I think Bret Baier is a pretty good interviewer. I've never really saw Bret Baier go soft either way. He kind of is the closest thing to a journalist when it comes to interviews as I've seen. So I don't expect kid glove treatment for her at all. He said repeatedly there's no preconditions, there's no agreement, there's no anything. So she's going to have to sit down with this. I don't know how long it is. It'll air tonight on Special Report at 5 o'clock, but she's finally doing an interview with somebody that isn't like some blogger that like slathers over her and everything else. And, Charlemagne yesterday and mostly a bunch of softballs. And so it'll be interesting. This will be good. I would. Here's how I'd analyze this. There's more peril, more downside than there is upside in this thing. More risk for her than there would be kind of the positives out of this. And for the first time, really since the debate, she's going in there with the great unknown. So this will be interesting. We'll see what she's challenged on. Obviously, whether she is cut off on the word salads and on the middle class thing and everything else, so should be good. She declined to do the Bloomberg interview, and again, Bloomberg is a typical leftist media corporate arm, and they had some quote-unquote journalist who doesn't like Donald Trump interview him for an hour, and kind of funny because if you watch the thing, it was an hour plus, and the crowd was the business community of Chicago. It was actually the Economic Club of Chicago that hosted it, and they had this Bloomberg guy do the interviewing, and they sat down, went back and forth for an hour, and the crowd was kind of tepid at first. By the end, they were like, giving him a standing O. So pretty interesting. They really appreciated it. And again, it's stuff that she just doesn't do. But I thought Donald Trump encapsulated kind of the question most voters are going to go to the polls with. And see if you notice something intriguing in this answer about common sense. And then I want to talk a little bit about what defines common sense these days and why this race might be different than and why the Democrats might be in some measure of trouble. Listen to this clip. Lunchtime today, PetroServe USA, home cooking, grab-and-go convenience. Swedish meatballs are everywhere. Swedish meatballs, bed of mashed potatoes, the gravy, Valley City, Harwood, West Main Avenue, West Fargo today. All have Swedish meatballs. Chicken fettuccine, also West Main Avenue, West Fargo. Sloppy Joe's, 12th and I-29. Country Fried Steak, MP Avenue, downtown Fargo and in Yulin. Chili Burger in Ada, Meatball Sub on 45th, Scallop Potatoes and Ham in Castleton, and Chicken Fettuccine in Wahpeton. All right, what did you hear in Donald Trump's litany of what describes common sense? Again, closing argument, 19 days until Election Day. What did you hear that stood out there? Kev, anything for you? It kind of you thought, wow, that's interesting that he's
spot on. It's, you know, it's common sense. He talks about the, you know, the lunacy of some of the things. I mean, we think that parents should maybe be involved in kids' gender affirming surgeries and some of the craziness, which I call way past reasonable. And all he's saying is that, you know, we're being reasonable here with most things, you know, the conservative side of the aisle, you know, the common sense side of the aisle. Now, you wrote a book on it. That's what blows me away, bro, is how many people have followed this craziness off the cliff. Well, we need to cover up for this, people. We need to defend that behavior. It's mind-boggling to me.
Let's save that analysis of how many people have followed them off the cliff until after the November election.
Yeah,
Because I actually think, and you nailed it. I mean, when he talks about, let's talk Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal, let's talk common sense. And obviously led with the border and talked about, you know, California, it's illegal to ask for a voter ID.
Wrap
your mind around that.
Come on.
But then goes to men and women's sports and talking about transgender surgeries for children.
Come on.
Wow.
Those are the two words I keep saying. Come on. Come on.
There's a story in the Wall Street Journal this week that talks about how the transgender sports issue is a sleeper issue. And there's votes that three Democratic fair-haired, they got to win or we lose control of the Senate senators. Testers won in Montana, Brown in Ohio, and Baldwin in Wisconsin, all under fire for their votes. So this is an issue that is backfiring, and I think it's one of the reasons that Trump is leading with it, again, in the 11th hour, you know, saying, hey, let's talk common sense here. I think there's a lot of people. Yesterday we said, hey, if you're a Harris voter that isn't of the opinion that, you know, I'm a Harris voter because I hate Trump, which to me is, I don't know, a lunacy and lazy, because all you need to do is say, how is my life under Trump? How has my life been the last 4 years? This is not hard. Not hard. But I'm also curious and want to spend some time on this today and tomorrow to say how many people that previously considered themselves Democrats would be inclined to vote that way, see the party going way wacko with, again, it's okay for men to play in women's sports. It's okay for there to be transgender surgeries for children. I mean, the Democratic endorsed candidate for president is on record as saying the taxpayers should pay for sex change surgeries for federal inmates. I mean, wrap your mind around that. Wow.
Paul. Wait a minute. What'd you say?
And it's an ad. It's part of this campaign. So I think that's a big reason it's different. Paul, let's get your take on this. You're next on What's on Your Mind on the road somewhere today. Hey, Paul.
Yeah. Hey. Good morning.
Good morning.
I am pro Trump. But I don't agree. I don't think that there's any common sense, period, in giving children transgender surgery. I think that it's moved the Overton window, so to speak. to actually have society even think that parents saying it's okay just, to me is perverted.
That's common sense that you're talking there, Paul.
Yeah. So, I'm not calling in to say that I'm anti-Trump. I just don't think, I don't agree with that one point.
Which one point don't you agree with? I'm hearing you agree with him that it's a bad idea. What do you disagree with him on?
I think he said we're against transgender surgeries without parental consent. In other words, if parents give consent, they should be able to have it. And I don't even agree with that.
I see what you're saying. What I heard was transgender surgeries in children. I didn't hear the caveat with the parents' consent, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you. There becomes a question there of saying, you know, is the parent fit at that point?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that we even have doctors that do these surgeries is mind blowing to me. I mean, so I'm from like the 80s, 90s. You tell our generation, you go back in time in a time machine and tell them that people are going to accept this large scale, and they'd be like, you're nuts. It'll never happen. And here we are.
Yeah, and by the way, we have a candidate for Vice President of the United States by the name of Tim Walz, Kamala Harris's candidate for VP, who actually signed legislation that said children can come to Minnesota for these surgeries without parental consent and get the surgeries done. This, again, is the law. Insane. That's the law in Minnesota.
Yeah, that's insane. Absolutely insane. And then I think she did another thing with prisoners, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, sex change, affirming surgeries for inmates.
That taxpayers should fund. Look, I don't know. I don't know where either of you come down on this, but if an adult decides that they don't particularly prefer their gender and wants to, you know, engage in some sort of surgery that's available, you know, and has the insurance to do it or whatever,
no problem.
Fine. Yeah, I mean, it's completely against my faith, my religion. I think it's wrong, but. I mean, it's you, right? America is America. That's on you. Okay, you made that decision. You're an adult. All right, fine. Well, I've seen enough research to be worried for you.
But children
and whether that ultimately there. But yeah, kids and no parental consent.
That goes to the drag queen thing too. No one cared. No one ever cared that RuPaul had a TV show or that they had clubs and they have Saturday night shows and all those things. And that's all fine and dandy. But stay out of the classrooms. Are you? You've gone way past reasonable. Sorry, Common Sense Ranch. You left.
Yeah. No. Very, very true. Paul, appreciate the call. Thanks a bunch. You guys have both hit on exactly what I heard in that clip from Donald Trump, and coupled with the Wall Street Journal evidence about how this is having an impact as a sleeper issue in 2024. I mean, maybe in the end we'll look back and say that was one of the reasons that. The Wall Street Journal put it this way. Every election has issues that are predictable. Abortion in the economy this year, but that also some that surprised the political class. This year, one sleeper issue is progressive transgender coercion, which is playing against Democrats in races across the country. Again, an awakening is happening, which I think it is great. Texter says, to stop this madness of transgender surgeries, it starts in the schools and the teachings in all schools by teachers who are pushing this stupidity. Yeah, there's a lot of agendas there. Texter says, Scott, you say it's against your religion, but it's personal choice isn't the same about abortion. Why should that concern you? Well, it concerns me because it's the killing of an innocent unborn child. It's another living human being that has, by our Constitution, a right to life. So that's why it concerns me. No different than I'd be concerned if somebody decided to shoot somebody they didn't like on the street. It's murder. That's why. Back on What's on Your Mind, brought to you today by our friends at Lindsay EcoWater. Take control of your water. Do you know what the water treatment plan has to do to make your water safe? They add chemicals. That's right. If you install an Echo Water refiner and drinking water system in your home, you'll notice a huge change in the taste and smell in that water. Makes your coffee taste like it's from your favorite coffee shop. Make your hair shinier and your skin softer. An eco refining system removes that hardness, that chlorine, those other chemicals in the water. Put the quality and safety of the water in your hands with Lindsay Echo Water. Find out more at lindsayechowater.com. Before we get to our guest, Senator Dale Patton, to talk Measure 4 here today on the program. Let me squeeze in Mike in Hinterdall, Minnesota. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, Scott. Appreciate you talking about the issue. It's like Trump was saying, there's a lot to weave in here, but basically the root cause analysis, when I look at this transgender issue, it gets to the gut microbiome, and it gets to be our health, and it is something that Kennedy's pushing and stuff, and that I'm very excited about Trump taking on, and I've always supported Trump, but the gut microbiome is one of the intricate things where our body can perform its cellular process, and when we have, like your Lindsay Echo Water commercial, when we have so many chemicals added into our bodies and our systems, from our farming practices to how food is processed and the thousands of additives that they put into it, all of our receptors are being blocked.
Yep.
People have different reactions. Some of them have cancer. Some of them have all these different ailments. Some people, when you don't have the 57 chemicals released in your brain, it thinks incorrectly. It feels incorrectly. And now you're in a world that is coming at you for ideologies when it's really just your brain is sick. And we need to do less about ideology, and because this is the sleeper issue that I am so passionate about. It's why I started farming and why I've started reducing certain intakes for my kids and my family. And I'm a self-employed hydraulic guy. You have to stand back and not look at the cylinder not moving. You have to not just see the leak, but you have to really dig deep. Where is the root cause?
And I think, Mike, don't you think...
break ideology.
And don't you think RFK...
you have the sickness.
Yeah, then don't you think RFK joining that team is like 10
Absolutely.
Thumbs up?
Yeah, yeah. We're actually later in the sport. Yeah. Later in the program.
I totally
today,
agree with what he's saying.
We're going to chat with a. Hey, Mike, do me a favor if you would leave your contact information with Kev, because I'd like to explore this more. We have a guest on a different topic pivoting to here. But
can I say something real quick? When RFK announced, I pushed him. I've always supported Trump, die hard, but I supported RFK in social media for the chess game to try to convince Democrats that this is the uniting issue. This is the school shootings. These are all the chemical imbalances, and this is the uniting issue. It's very true.
Interesting. So. Yeah. Hang tight, if you would. Love to talk more about it. We're also, as I mentioned, going to chat with a Fox News medical contributor next hour a little bit about how he believes RFK's influence on a Trump administration, what it would mean for the FDA and other government agencies that have worked to keep some of these treatments from the public or having this issue get to the transparency it needs. Appreciate the call very much. I want to talk with Dale Patton. Dale's a senator representing Watford City. One area of concern that I would argue that some of the larger opposition to Measure 4, the property tax measure, comes from is rural North Dakota and the impacts that it's going to be. And obviously, Dale represents a very important part of North Dakota's economy, but a rural one. Senator Patton, nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm very well, Scott. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, looking forward to the conversation. So what's your overall thought on Measure 4?
Well, I think the pathway that they've taken on trying to do tax relief is wrong. It doesn't allow for any adjustments. When we look at changing our Constitution in a manner like this, we're going to have some consequences that are going to be longstanding and I think very dire, and especially for rural North Dakota.
Describe those. What would that look like? What's dire about it?
When you look at the funding, you know, we lock into the 2024 tax base. So that's the dollar amount that each political subdivision would receive from the state. And I hear a lot about the state has a $19 billion budget. Well, in reality, that $19 billion, I'm rounding to the nearest billion, so that, you know, we'll do rounding here. About $6 billion of that is federal dollars that are specifically designated to specific programs. So we can't touch that. About $7 billion is what I call fees for services. That's like our workforce safety premiums, our tuition premiums at our university system, game and fish licenses and registrations. our gas tax. Those are all go for fees for services. They're designated to a specific thing, and we cannot take that away from that service that's being provided and redesignate it. And that leaves about $6 billion of general funds that we do have the discretion about how we spend. Essentially, out of that, we fund essential government services. And this is where that $3.15 billion per biennium, again, I'm talking about a two-year budget cycle.
The cost.
Yes.
Of what you need to make up is that 3.1.
Yep. That comes out of that $6 billion. And when you start looking at that, that's half of what we have available. And the other part about when we look at the funding that comes with that $6 billion, a lot of that money is actually being spent out in the state. Most of it is. It's road projects. It's rural water projects. It's all these types of things where they go out to benefit the people that live here. So that's what would go away. When we look at the sources of it, the prairie dog money, which a lot of people might not be familiar, but that's oil and gas tax money that's shared with non-oil and gas producing political subdivisions across the entire state. And that would be used to offset it. So that's a local funding source that now would be used to satisfy this measure. And it would be a loss of revenue streams for those local political subdivisions.
So translate that. If what you're talking about happening, they need to find the $3 billion.
Yep.
What you're arguing is they're going to take things away from the local governments that are currently being funded out of that $3 billion right now.
That'll be part of it. The three things priority-wise. Number one, because this is constitutional if it passes, that would be the first thing that gets funded by the state. Number two would be essential government services. And by that, that's going to be the argument of what's considered essential. But, you know, our state treasurer's office, auditor's office, all those things that state government that we're required to do. And then the third thing would be those projects or expenses that are the discretion of the legislature, meaning how much do we put into our resources trust fund for water projects? How much additional do we fund for the DOT? How much do we share with our local counties and political subdivisions and townships for road improvements? Those are all at the discretion of the legislature and would be offset to fund this. I think ultimately, and especially rural North Dakota, and I want to clear something up too when we talk about Measure 4, it actually does not eliminate property tax. It only eliminates the ability to use assessed value as a method of determining what that property tax is. A future legislature could go in and say, okay, we can't use assessed value, but we can use square footage of your home. We can use the number of acres that you have and set a fee on that.
So is it your belief that because you're not going to be able to find the $3.15 billion without impacting the local governments, that what you'll instead have is something that is a property tax just not based on assessment value?
That's one of the options. Others are sales tax, income tax. These will all be, I think, in the if it passes the 25 legislative session, will be about cutting spending across the board to meet the goal. It will be about spending down our rainy day funds and probably will not include any tax increases. Even the proponents of Measure 4 have talked about tax increases. They put that on the table. They could say you can increase taxes to meet this obligation. You can increase taxes to meet the inflationary needs needs of inflation or if you have a growing community.
So when the dust settles, essentially what you believe is the burden on the local taxpayer to fund their fire department, their police department, the streets and roads is going to end up being the same thing. There's not going to be the relief there in the end.
There will not. The only difference is that roughly $1 billion of this that's being paid by out-of-state landowners will no longer be paid by out-of-state landowners. And they'll have to come back to the in-state residents to fund that. And it might not be the total, you know, we might, instead of a $6 billion budget, we might have a $5 or $5.5 billion budget. But it'll come out of things that we've done out in the state.
What do you say to people who just say, I want relief? I'm tired of excuses. It's not there. We talked to Kelly Armstrong yesterday. He said, we need reform badly. Then let's do the relief piece. But, you know, there's people that don't care about every detail you just said because they see themselves getting their property taxes eliminated.
Yeah. When I look at that, I've seen on social media where the legislature failed to pass 20 different property tax relief bills. Well, they didn't say about the ones that we did pass. Since 2007, I think we're looking at almost $8 billion in property tax relief that the state has provided. We've taken over the funding of social services. We've taken over the funding of the court systems. We've funded roughly 70% of education. K-12 education comes from the state. So there's been a huge amount of property tax relief provided by the state already. But
that hasn't resulted in the kind of relief down to the homeowner level, right?
You know who assesses property taxes? The local political subdivisions. The legislature doesn't assess any. We only have one statewide mill levy that's constitutional and goes to the medical school of Grand Forks. So the legislature does not levy property taxes. The local school boards, county commissions, city councils are the ones that determine those budgets.
So is that where the reform is necessary?
Yes, if you don't like the other thing, I spent 12 years as a county commissioner, Scott, and I don't remember anybody ever coming in to the county commission meeting and asking for fewer services. They wanted their roads plowed more often. They wanted the snow removed more often. They wanted more law enforcement, better public safety. They wanted more assets for the fire departments. They always asked for higher services. So when we talk about cutting spending, and it's time to get real about that, what we're actually talking about is cutting services to our public. It means that if we're going to cut education funding and cut spending, that means 75 to 80% of school funding goes to salaries and benefits. So when we say we're going to cut our education funding, reduce that to save money, that means are we going to pay our teachers less? Are we going to have fewer teachers in the classroom and larger classes? That's what we're talking about there. When we go to cutting $3 billion or finding $3 billion, you don't find that in the small budgets. You find that in the big budgets.
Short break. We'll continue. Let you finish this after the other side of the break. Chat with Senator Dale Patton today on measure number 4. On What's On Your Mind, still to come, Liz Collin. She'll be in Fargo tomorrow night. Give you a preview of that event, talk about her new documentary and more. Stay tuned. Did you know that the oil and natural gas industry in North Dakota touches every corner of our great state? It's true. Find out more at ndpetroleum.org. North Dakota oil and natural gas advancing the possibilities. Want to pick up where you left off on services, but Charlie in Fargo has a question on taxes. For Senator Dale Patton, talking Measure 4 today on the program. Go ahead, Charlie.
Hey, Senator Dale, you know, to me, you sound like an addict. You're addicted to spending, and I don't get it. And for me, I have gone to my county commission numerous times and said, cut everything, cut every program by 10%. So we are out there. We're tired of you spending our money wastefully. We're tired of – we got a superintendent in Fargo that makes over $200,000 a year. Yeah, we could cut his budget. He doesn't listen to the state law. He doesn't listen to parents in the community. So we could fire him for all I can care. I don't care. So, and your point that the legislature will just change and do something different, they do that all the time anyways. They literally tax it. They say they're cutting here, and you're playing the same game. Oh, it's not our fault. It's the local assessors. Constant game claiming. I'm voting yes for Measure 4, and I'm voting no on every other tax increase. I hope you guys start getting the message. We're tired of you're sounding like a Democrat. So stop spending our money recklessly.
All right. Charlie, thanks for the call. Dale, you want to respond to that?
Well, I would argue that our legislature has actually been very conservative. When we look at what we do at the state, we are very conscious and aware of what we commit to as far as ongoing expenses. In other words, we have it every year going on into the future. Very, very careful about that. We are a commodity-based economy. In the last 40 years, we've had oil prices as low as $6 a barrel and as high as $140 a barrel. In the last 12 years, we've had oil prices and production that have dropped to the point where we have cut budgets at the state level dramatically and impacted the services that we provide. And that's because we're aware that we have a commodity-based economy. And as a result of that, we're very careful about any project that comes in that requires ongoing funding. So the second point that I want to make is that we have a lot of rainy day funds. because we know that we're a commodity-based economy that has fluctuations. We set aside money and a whole bunch of rainy day funds for those times when oil prices drop or production drops or egg commodity prices are weaker. We have those rainy day funds that to help get us through that those sessions. And in the good years, we do have projects that we do fund, infrastructure projects a lot of the time. We talk about using the legacy fund, for example, to fund all of this. Well, we're at $11 billion in the legacy fund, and we use the earnings off of that to fund three generally separate things. One is general operating costs of government, whether that's state or local, and that keeps our taxes lower as a result of that. We also fund infrastructure projects with it, which also keep taxes lower because we get these road projects done. We get other infrastructure projects completed in our state that we would normally have to use tax dollars to do it. And the third thing that we do is we reinvest it into the legacy fund to help that grow even greater so that we can fund longer into the future. We'll have more money available that we won't have to have our citizens pay. So those are the three things we use our legacy fund with. And I would argue that we are very conservative as a state. And when we do these one-time funding expenses, it's when we've had good years and we have the revenue streams to do it.
Another listener says, we don't care where you find it. We care about the right to keep our house in the event we are unable to afford the tax they levy on our property. My home should not be collateral to what the government thinks I need to pay.
Okay. And that's my one point is you could argue that property taxes are not moral. Some people have done that. But this measure, as I indicated, does not eliminate the ability to assess a tax. It only eliminates the ability to use taxable valuation as a method of assessing a tax. Governments, I don't care what state you're in, what county you're in, what city you're in, will somehow find a revenue stream to fund what the public wants.
You've just defined why I'm a no voter on Measure 4.
Yeah.
Because I think people are going to find in the end there's no difference here.
Yes.
And the only way that would change is to have a real adult conversation about what services you do not want. And some people are ready to have that conversation.
Yep. Like I mentioned earlier, if you're going to find $3 billion, you're going to have to go to the big budgets in order to find that. And by big budgets, I'm talking about school funding. You're not going to find $3 billion with a $200,000 salary superintendent in Fargo. You're going to find it all over the state. You're going to have find it in road budgets. You're going to find it in public safety. Those are probably the three biggest budgets that are funded by local political subdivisions.
That's something I don't think the citizens are going to tolerate being without,
yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Reductions there, not here. Any final thing you want to say for voters on Measure 4 you want them to know, Dale?
We passed $500 million worth of tax relief in the last session. Three out of five North Dakotans don't pay any income tax. We gave a $500 primary residence tax credit to those that applied. We increased the ability for the homestead tax credit for our seniors and our disabled. And we're going to do more of that this next session.
Reform and relief.
Yes.
Interesting debate, and the perspective of someone that represents a rural part of North Dakota, very important to our overall economy with oil and gas, but interesting perspective we haven't had before. So thank you for sharing with us.
You bet.
Senator Dale Patton joining us today in studio on What's on Your Mind. Liz Collin when we come back on a new documentary on first responders under attack. Welcome back to another hour of What's on Your Mind, brought to you today in part by our friends at Cirrusset. Seasonal affect disorder is real. Because, of course, this time of year, there's less sunshine, unfortunately. Morning and evenings are dark. That causes a couple of things. Lack of energy, depression in some, change in appetite, fatigue, sleep disorder. So if the extended darkness is getting you down or keeping you from doing things you love, Cirrusset can help. They help a lot of folks out with this seasonal affect disorder. Call them at 566-5231. CERESET.com to find out more. Cirrusset, 701-566-5231. Find sponsor of What's on Your Mind. 7 past the hour. Interesting story. We'll talk with Liz Collin in just a moment about tomorrow night, the Media, the Truth, and You, the big event at the Avalon Event Center in Fargo. Looking forward to the conversation. She and Michelle Tafoya will be here. And Liz, of course, probably best known for The Fall of Minneapolis, incredible documentary and a lot of good work they do at Alpha News, but have chronicled quite the story about crime in Minneapolis. Real Clear Politics Investigations has come out today with an interesting revision just a few short days before the election from the FBI. So the FBI's latest stats had claimed that crime was down, right? They released their final crime data for 2022 about a year ago. And it reported then that the nation's violent crime rate was down by 2.1%. Now, we dug into that a little bit and found out they were counting differently and all kinds of things. It was a big mess. But now the FBI has quietly, at the 11th hour, revised those numbers, releasing new data today that shows violent crime increased by 4.5% in 2022.
Uh-oh.
So more murders, rapes, robberies, and aggravated assaults all of a sudden popping into the the little story they want to tell. So, again, just like this administration has been famous for doing when it comes to jobs numbers, you know, these radical revisions of like 800,000 jobs. Whoa, we were off by that much. It's wrong. Now they're doing it on crime stats too. So I thought you'd find that interesting little tidbit there. Liz Collin, welcome back to What's on Your Mind. Excited to have you in town tomorrow night with Michelle Tafoya, and a fun, interesting evening for our listeners, the media, the truth, and you. Before we're done today, we'll tell our listeners how you can get tickets for that. But welcome back to What's on Your Mind.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to chat again. I know this is radio. You can't see my shocked face after that story, but again, there was no shock. you don't really have to look too far to figure out that they're lying about that, with the large departments not reporting their statistics. Minneapolis alone, homicides are up 30% from where they were last year. Putting them on track for the fourth record in a row for homicides in that city, of course, since 2020. I could go on and on about just crime stats in Minneapolis alone, but it is truly amazing how the government wants to hide this from all of us, it seems.
Yeah, and there used to be a time when there was something called journalism. And that's where you would say, well, wait a minute, how can that be? Look at Minneapolis, look at New York, look at Chicago, look at Los Angeles. Something's not right here. But now we just wait for them to quietly revise them and then pat everybody on the head and say, you know, that's great. Which is, you know, I've said this often. I think journalism is pretty much dead. There are some examples of it out there. You're a prime example of that. And we appreciate you very much for what you do and celebrate you because of that. Christopher Rofu, another guy, did a great job on a story this week about some plagiarism of what used to be a political death, nail in the coffin, but not when it's Kamala Harris. A few examples out there where I can say that, you know, hey, there's a shining star. But sadly, overall, big media, corporate media, has led us to a point where most of journalism is just basically an arm of the political persuasion that they're in favor of, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree with you. I actually think that there is good journalism happening out there. We just got to get used to it not coming from the places that perhaps we grew up trusting. It does seem to be the absolute opposite of that. We have a documentary coming out tomorrow through Alpha News that I hope people will stay tuned for, but it goes really right along with what we're talking about this morning here, called Minnesota Versus We the People. It'll be on Rumble through Alpha News and then eventually on YouTube as well, but it really has come to this. We've had 5 first responders murdered in Minnesota in a matter of 13 months. Never happened in history before. Why isn't anybody connecting the dots, it seems, to this, lawlessness and lawfare and danger that has just been ongoing? It's sort of the next chapter from the fall of Minneapolis. Certainly not another project we wanted to do, but we are committed to telling the truth and pointing out a lot of these lies along the way.
Yeah, tell me more about that story, because, again, you hear a story, it goes away very quickly. And, this was eye-opening just in the sheer numbers that you're talking about that these first responders have faced it. But give us the background on the story, on the documentary.
Yeah, I actually think nationally that attacks against law enforcement are on track to basically be the highest they've been in a 3-year period ever in history before. But we've been chronicling this at Alpha News, you know, since really the inception, because it does seem that we have, you know, lived in a society where the script is flipped and, you know, the good guys seem to be the bad guys, and the media loves to put criminals on pedestals, partly why I left corporate media. I just didn't feel morally that this is what we should really be doing and pandering to the public in this way, and not telling them the truth about, you know, these activist organizations that are out there and, you know, tracking and following the money. That's what you're supposed to do as a journalist. And a lot of this is just a cash grab, you know, especially in Minneapolis with the groups that we have in charge now that have, you know, essentially taken over security as that department has dwindled, you know, by nearly 40%. But yeah, we really wanted to focus on a lot of the rrhetoric, and a lot of that is coming from Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty, focusing on the Ryan Londrigan case specifically. He was the Minnesota State Trooper charged with murder after a traffic stop involving Ricky Cobb, and talking extensively to his attorney, Chris Maddle, who wasn't afraid to push back against Moriarty and catching her in several lies during her press conferences, exposing that a bit more, and really also giving families of these officers a chance to really tell the stories rather than just a, you know, a minute or two on the news in short sound bites, but really unthinkable losses, and these officers deserve so much more.
13 months, 5 first responders murdered in Minnesota. I mean, that's a wake-up call of gargantuan proportions there. And you're getting happy talk from elected officials, right?
Yeah, it's as if, you know, you'll see tomorrow, hopefully as many people will watch as possible, or this weekend. Feel free to share the link. Links, we want people to do that. We wanted to get this out before the election. We were working on this before Tim Walz was named as the VP pick, but he plays a pretty crucial role in all of this in his 6 years as governor of the state of Minnesota. And some would say his actions or inactions that people have questioned. You know, some families have asked that he not even attend the funerals of fallen law enforcement officers due to his rhetoric. He was meeting with Ricky Cobb's family the day after the incident and has yet to, you know, reach out to Minnesota State Trooper Ryan Londrigan in the wake of all of this.
The documentary, by the way, is called Minnesota versus We the People, and you said it drops tomorrow. Is that right?
Yep, tomorrow morning. It should the link should probably be live about 7. Is the plan on our Rumble channel. It's about 50 minutes in length. So I do think you're going to want to be in a place where you can really take it in. It's pretty emotional. And again, a project I would just wish that we didn't even have to do.
I'm glad you're doing it, though, because this needs the attention. And what's the fall of Minneapolis up to for views now? It's been unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, I think the Tim Walz situation has certainly kicked things up a bit, but I think we have about 10 million or so between all of our social channels and Rumble and YouTube, and, you know, still just trying to wake up as many people as possible. The truth is a powerful thing.
I'm 3 of them.
No kidding. The truth is a powerful
you.
Thing.
Thanks, guys.
Why was J.D. Vance in Minnesota yesterday in front of the 3rd Precinct? Yeah, interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about that. I think it was actually the day before yesterday, but candidate for VP on the Republican ticket in Minnesota. Important reason why. We'll talk with Liz about that. Get your details on tomorrow night's event at Fargo as well at the Avalon. Stay tuned for all that coming up. Chatting with Liz Collin today on the program. You can follow her work at alphanews.org. Alphanews.org. Also check out the documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis. If you haven't seen it, you must, prior to the election, just so you can tell as many people as possible that Tim Walz should be nowhere near the vice presidency of the United States, and the new documentary out tomorrow as well. Tomorrow night, The Election, The Truth, and You, from the perspective of two wonderful members of the media, actual journalist Michelle Tafoya, who's been on some of the biggest stages in professional sports, host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast on Salem Networks, and our guest Liz Collin, who is a rising national star after a decorated career in the Twin Cities television news world, And, of course, behind the Bombshell documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, as well as the new one as well that we talked about just a moment ago. So we are in the final weeks of the campaign season, and these two are connected, credible media personalities. They'll really shine an interesting light on the election and the impact on our region and our country, and certainly no better folks to talk about the impact Minnesota's Governor Tim Walz may have on the country if he and Kamala Harris are elected. VIP ticket holders will be invited to a pre-show meet and greet. Special discounts for teachers, veterans, law enforcement members. Tickets start at $15. Get them at am1100theflag.com, am1100theflag.com. I was thrilled to see J.D. Vance, Donald Trump's running mate, in Minneapolis in front of the old 3rd Precinct this week. What was that about? Tell us about why he was there and what he did in front of the old 3rd Precinct in Minneapolis, Liz.
Yeah, he made a few stops on Monday. We had a crew. Our Alpha News reporter, Jenna Globe, was with him, and a photographer we have as well for the day. But he did make a stop there at the 3rd Precinct. And, in fact, there was an officer who was featured in the Fall of Minneapolis and also in my book, They're Lying. Scott Creighton is his name. He's a retired Minneapolis police officer, but he lost teeth in the riots after being hit by bricks, from those peaceful protesters. And J.D. Vance, really, I think, wanted to capitalize, on this, what's sadly become this iconic image, a bit of a, almost tribute to anarchy that, is there at the 3rd Precinct. The building still stands as it, was the day after it was surrendered to the mob, this charred building that remains there, as they still haven't quite finalized their plans as to what will happen. But he just spoke about these attacks on law enforcement. It's interesting how the media then crafted this message that J.D. Vance was talking about how this is a city in decline and how horrible the city is. And it's just truly amazing to me the gaslighting that takes place. by the media, because I don't know how you could look around and not just see with your own eyes what's going on.
It's like Kevin Bacon in Animal House when the riot's breaking out. He's like, "All is calm," and don't pay attention to any of that.
Yeah, that's what.
Again,
just even the headlines, the coverage was just kind of a joke, sadly, with how they treated it all. But I thought it was a great event. I mean, it also goes to show that they think Minnesota is in play. They're, definitely giving it a lot of attention and not giving up.
Yeah, I thought that interesting as well. Political has a story out today talking about, with Governor Walz on the Democratic presidential ticket, the state's policies are drawing national scrutiny. I think there could be a lot more of it, but what do you think has been most refreshing to take from the local scene that you knew that's getting some national traction specific to Walz, Liz?
Oh, I think that it's pretty telling that after Walz was picked as Harris's running mate, her favorability even went down in Minnesota. What does that tell you about his, so-called popularity even in this state? There's rumors that Trump will be back here in Minnesota. A lot of people want to write Minnesota off and, move to Florida. But I don't think that's what we all need to be doing. I mean, I've kind of been relieved that so much of this has gotten out there now. I mean, we've frankly reported a lot of these stories years ago, and it's now forced, other media in town to do the same. And you wouldn't be able to find our stories. Let's say if you do a Google search, if you're vetting this guy, they're just not going to show up. That's the way censorship works nowadays. So the facts are clearly on, our side. And I've helped national reporters in town trying to tell the story of Walz, and they've even struggled finding people who will go on camera who support and like him. Let's take even the Mankato game last Friday. This is a place where, he lived for years and was a teacher. That was really manufactured in a way. Students couldn't bring posters. They couldn't boo him, they were told. There was an airplane that flew overhead that said Bench Coach Walz, Trump 2024. I mean, this wasn't some, happy homecoming as it was portrayed. There was a lot more going on behind the scenes that people didn't know about.
Well, and I'm looking right now at alphanews.com, an article that dropped yesterday. Walz, Minnesota, ranked last for fiscal policy out of 50 states from the Libertarian Cato Institute, from the report they released. We're last, right behind New York. Yay.
Yeah, and I just don't think a lot of this would have come out, you know, if he wasn't thrown up on the national stage. And, you know, even speaking of that, I don't even recognize who he is. It's very strange after covering him, who, you know, what they've kind of manufactured as a candidate. Very odd.
Yeah.
Has he always been this weird on stage? I guess I don't remember a lot. There's been this kind of bizarre childlike waving and jumping around, and, you know, he's being compared on Saturday Night Live to Chris Farley. It's like, what is going on with this guy?
Yeah, it is totally different. I mean, the weight loss, I get, that's one thing, but it's like there's a different person almost that's up there. You know, and we kind of knew, even people that, you know, we interviewed before, he was kind of referred to as a masterful liar. That's what several state representatives would call him in different stories I've reported on. But then to see how he holds up against that, you know, under the national media spotlight, and I don't, you know, I think he's kind of been exposed in many ways, you know, whether it's lying about his military rank or kind of you name the subject, it seems that it's been clouded. But no, I mean, he's like a cartoon character up there, and I've just never seen that before.
There is a couple of Twitter accounts that have been suggesting that there are individuals that are going to come forward with some allegations about some sexual impropriety on his part. I know there's no names behind it, so a lot of people are really not touching this with a 10-foot pole because it's like, you know, wait a minute, is there any there? Have you heard much about that at all?
Yeah, we've certainly checked out many things in regard to him, just different tips and whatnot, but you know, I don't feel that there is enough there to substantiate the claims at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some statements from individuals that are not named that are disturbing, but obviously with not a name behind them, you start to say, well, you know, what is this? What's there, you know,
right.
The allegations are certainly disturbing, but until you have somebody actually come forward and say, hey, this happened and here's how. I noticed the New York Times did pick up a piece of this not long ago where they talked about he was the head of a gay straight alliance at a school. He taught it in Nebraska, and then also had some records from the school board there where him and his wife both resigned shortly after there was some controversy down there. So there might be more brewing there, but so far I haven't seen much there at all. Hey, all of this and much more tomorrow night, going to be a wonderful event. The Election, the Truth, and You with not only Liz Conlon, but also Michelle Tafoya. Go to am1100theflag.com to get your tickets and join us tomorrow night, 7 o'clock for the big event, and a VIP event if you want to attend that as well. Liz, we're looking forward to having you in town tomorrow night and this wonderful event. So thanks so much for joining us.
Looking forward to it as well. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Keep up the great work, and congrats on another must-see documentary. Find out all the details at alphanews.org and follow them on their Rumble channel to see that. It is must-see TV, just like the Fall of Minneapolis was. Liz Conlon with us on What's on Your Mind. When we come back, the RFK Jr. influence on a Trump-Vance administration. We're going to dig into that a little bit with a doctor. Stay tuned. What's on Your Mind brought to you today by PetroServe USA. The home cooking is waiting. It's a Swedish meatball kind of day. And this isn't, you know, like a couple of Swedish meatballs call it good. This is like a pile of Swedish meatballs on a big mound of mashed potatoes with the gravy. Who's in? Let's do it. Three locations to choose from today. PetroServe USA, Valley City, Harwood, or West Main Avenue, West Fargo all have the Swedish meatballs or chicken fettuccine. West Main Avenue, West Fargo, another choice for you there. Sloppy Joe's, 12th and I-29. Country Fried Steak, MP Avenue, downtown Fargo location, or Yulin. Chili Burger in Ada. Meatball Sub at the 45th Fargo location today. Scallop, potatoes, and ham. That's a lunch, folks. Home cooking right there. Castleton has that today. Chicken fettuccine in Wappanen. Just saw a note on Georgia. Very important state in the election. One of those states we're watching closely. 300,000 Georgians voted yesterday in the historic first day of voting, of early voting, which is a new record. The previous record was 136,000 in 2020. According to a Georgia GOP source that is getting the data updates regularly, I'm very encouraged. Only 100,000 from core Atlanta counties, and a significant percentage of those votes will be GOP. All the rest are smaller cities, but the overwhelming majority is from rural counties. Keep doing the work and turning out the vote. Sprint through the finish line, says Charlie Kirk with an update on Georgia. I'm going to watch all those numbers closely. One thing that's been happening in Arizona and Georgia and some of these key counties is registration efforts where the numbers, if you compare 2020 and 2016, have significant increases in Republican registered voters and significant decreases in what previously were enormous gaps between Republicans registered and Democrats registering. So some good news out there. 19 days to go. Nothing to do but keep the gas on the pedal for sure. But we like little stories like that when they come out. I want to talk a little bit about what kind of an influence Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would be on a Trump and Vance administration. Our next guest is a someone you've seen before on Fox News as a medical contributor. He's also written about President Trump, a book called Trump, Your Life. And we're going to talk a little bit about the FDA and what Trump, now with the influence of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. being part of this, would have dealing with the FDA and other government agencies who have worked to keep some treatments from the public in the past. Dr. Keith Ablo joins us now on the program. Dr. Keith, thanks for taking some time for us today. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, and thanks for having me.
So let's talk big picture first. What kind of an influence do you think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has had on President Trump, and how will that translate in another Trump administration?
Well, a number of ways, not the least of which is that he has Robert Kennedy has a healthy level of cynicism, a healthy level of cynicism about the pharmaceutical industry, which has given us great gifts, you know, some wonderful treatments, but has many excesses as well. And I think that he'll be a great voice for giving the message that there are very effective and powerful treatments that just never come through the FDA process because they're either generic or they're naturally occurring and can't be patented. So they have no natural champion who would spend the money to go through the incredible process that costs so many millions of dollars to get something approved for a particular illness. And you'd have to fight, and there are these headwinds politically at the FDA because Big Pharma has a big seat at the table there. And, you know, there really is resistance to the approval process for naturally occurring or generic substances that nobody can make a boatload of money from getting approved to treat conditions, even if they're conditions that kill lots of people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I heard him say the other day, you know, Robert F. Kennedy, I'm speaking of now, RFK Jr. often gets labeled as the guy that is totally against vaccines. And he made a point to say, look, vaccines have a role, and if you want a vaccine, you ought to get one. That ought to be up to you. But you ought to know what the research says about each of these vaccines. That's an area where reform is necessary at the FDA, is it not?
It definitely is. And listen, we're only now, after decades, many of them, reexamining whether fluoride in drinking water, which is good for teeth, nobody argues that, whether it might be bad for kids developing brains. So how can it be that we would rush to judgment and not look at any of the naysayers' information, which was robust and remains even more so now, has become even more so, look at the data saying, well, wait a second, this could compromise brain development as kids get older and become adolescents and teens. Shouldn't we have paused sooner? And what forces exist to greenlight things as opposed to not? I mean, I'm happy, you know, happy to be right now consulting to this company that makes a thing called Cavidex. Cavidex, according to the founder, cured him completely of atherosclerosis. It removed all the blockages in his arteries, and he had been given months to live. Now, the FDA is destroying all shipments of Cavidex, not all of them, 20% of them, because they say, listen, you're claiming it cures heart disease. My point is, well, okay, since doctors are prescribing it or using it in the United States, it doesn't require a prescription. They're giving it to patients, and the patients say they're getting better. Shouldn't that maybe the FDA should just insist that a giant red label go on the product that says the FDA does not agree that this works. And make it like cigarettes if you want to, but why halt a potentially natural remedy from being distributed to Americans when we would get the answer pretty fast, a lot faster than fluoride, because if folks were on their deathbeds from cardiovascular disease and got better, we would sure know about it, and they seem to say, the company, that's what's happening. Shouldn't we figure it out kind of quickly?
So in that case, the FDA feels as though they're protecting the consumer from a claim, basically, that they're
that's
more
right.
about what the claims are. Then they're not saying, you know, if you take this, it's bad for you or anything like that. They're just saying you can't claim that, so they're literally destroying the product?
Isn't that incredible? That's exactly right. So basically, Cavidex is a cyclodextrin. These are little rings. They're little ring-like sugar molecules, but the body doesn't metabolize them, so they don't increase your blood sugar. The center of the little donut of each little molecule is very hungry for lipids, fats. And the theory is they go around your arteries, and because they're so hungry, like little sponges, they absorb blockages that are made out of fat or calcium, which is part of the atherosclerotic plaque that's blocking the artery. And the FDA does not say this is harmful to people. They've approved cyclodextrins. They have no beef with Cavidex in that way. They're saying, you're claiming it cures heart disease. We're going to destroy the product. If he was in the United States, this guy's in Australia, if he was in the United States, they might well arrange for him to be arrested or prosecuted for false claims. But listen, we've put fluoride in the water for decades, and now we're saying it might harm kids' brains. And here we've got something that no pharma company is going to fund because, frankly, these molecules aren't patentable. And so you got a company doing this like sort of a cowboy, and you got big government saying we're going to crush it, even though the answer would be forthcoming very quickly if they didn't crush it.
So what's the motivation here? Why, in that case, is it the FDA Big Pharma Alliance such that they, in this case, they don't want a natural product out there that would be competition? What reform necessary at the FDA under your example you're using is most needed?
Well, let's say that the politics is baked into the process, and it happens to be the case that they have a language at the FDA. They say, listen, but you haven't taken it through animal studies. You haven't taken it through human studies. That's the only way you can sort of speak to us to get our approval. And I'm suggesting, well, maybe there's a way for you to express your disfavor and not approve the claim and put a big, giant red sticker on the product. Because who is going to spend the 10 or 20 million bucks to take it through those studies? And why would we necessarily want to wait the 5 years for that to happen if people are dropping like flies, which, you know, it's the leading cause of death in America, cardiovascular disease? Shouldn't we kind of fast track this?
Yeah.
There's no way to speak in that way.
Sounds like we can have adverse reactions from a COVID vaccine that are, you know, unlike anything we've ever seen with a vaccine, and we sort of look the other way, right?
Exactly. So why did they rush the COVID vaccine through? I'm not sure it's just because, oh, we were scared everyone was going to die. The data didn't show that. But the data sure did show that many, many, many billions of dollars could be made from the vaccines by Big Pharma. So you see the vaccines go out like a bullet from the FDA, and this is being destroyed at the border when, listen, one thing I don't like is doublespeak. I guarantee you there are folks at the FDA who this minute probably are saying, hey, I heard about this thing, Cavidex, and I have a relative who is at death's door from cardiovascular disease. You might want to give it a try. But they're not going to say that to us. Doctors don't do that either. I asked my dad's doctor, hey, what about this particular natural remedy? Different one. He said, oh, well, there's not enough data. But if it were his dad, he'd be like, well, I don't think there's any harm from it, and there's early scientific evidence that this could be helpful. Go for it. In other words, these heroic measures don't have to be that heroic. This stuff doesn't seem to hurt anybody. Why can't it be used? And the FDA can scream, we don't like it. Okay, but don't destroy it.
Yeah, how about a right to try model? Donald Trump obviously famously promoted that medical treatment to be able to put that in law where it was being provided. You're talking about a similar version of that. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, yep. I want to talk a little bit about, just how big that behemoth is and how, again, the Trump RFK alliance could, can they win? Are they able to go in there and bring in some of those reforms? So hang tight, if you would. Dr. Keith Ablow is with us. You've seen him on Fox News as a medical contributor there, author of a book called Trump Your Life, and is talking today a little bit about the influence that a Trump-RFK alliance would have on the FDA and other government agencies, for that matter, that have a process that on one end keeps the treatment from the public out of abundance of caution, I guess, they would claim. But on the other hand, when there's red flags on other ones, are not doing anything. How do you take that monster on? More as we continue on the program. If you have a question or comment, 701-271-1100 or text us 237-1590. Listen to that crowd.
Yeah, how hard is that? Yeah, the answer is exactly right. No.
What you heard from President Trump there was moral clarity. We touched on this issue earlier, but just wanted to give you a clip from the town hall and let you know how it's going. More on that tomorrow on the program. Finishing our chat with Dr. Keith Ablow, former Fox News medical contributor, author of Trump Your Life, talking about the FDA. You've done a good job of laying out the pain points here and where the roadblocks are and how there's conflicting, it seems, agendas by the FDA. I mean, this is not a new problem. How do you believe, day one, Trump and RFK Jr. go in and actually have progress on this issue? What would you advise them?
I would advise them to do this by cutting the head off the beast. You've got to put in leadership at FDA that understands that the right to try can be expanded. And it doesn't have – why should it be that an agent has to be – a medicine has to be – already in clinical trials? What if someone said, I want to procure it, it's been in animal trials, it hasn't been in humans yet, I still want to try it? At stake here is autonomy and the idea that people have their own minds and that they can sift through some data, and we're not children, right? So if there's a molecule out there that you'd like to try, ivermectin, by the way, there's plenty of evidence that ivermectin is helpful in cancer. Okay, now ivermectin is basically non-toxic. If somebody wants to get ivermectin prescribed to them to add it to a chemotherapy regimen, why wouldn't they be able to do that? Especially if they're facing dire circumstances. The kind of autonomy that the Democrats want is to give people the choice to ruin their lives by transitioning and adopting a different gender. Literally, they want to tie people up mentally, deciding, am I a man or am I a woman? Because that's the kind of independence and autonomy the Democrats want to offer people. And they want insurance companies to pay for that. And they want, what is that? That's a road to confusion and the opposite of autonomy. The right to try would be real autonomy.
Yeah, and basically the right to try with medical procedures was something that Trump was able to get passed. You're talking about expanding that into some of these products that are available as well. Again, full disclosure, yes. Give it to the consumer. Makes good sense. I think if Trump wins, RFK will be one of the reasons why, no doubt about it, and this will be fascinating to watch happen. Appreciate your take on it, Dr. Keith Ablow. Thank you. God bless you, folks. See you tomorrow on What's on Your Mind.